Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier. Game on. Soccer.
Now, the ongoing saga at the FAI is continuing. It was announced today that they've appointed Paul Cook as the executive lead of the association just a day after John Foley opted out of taking the reins as the interim CEO at the last minute. It is a never-ending saga, and Emmett Malone joins us on the line of the Irish Times. Emmett, what was your reaction to this latest news?
Well, I guess the appointment of Paul Cook wasn't a huge surprise after yesterday. The FAI had a problem. They didn't have a chief executive. They didn't have kind of executive leadership at a point where they really needed it. Foley's, the last kind of minute nature of Foley's withdrawal had kind of come as a bit of a shock. And so they went into last night's board meeting, which had originally been scheduled to talk about financial issues, and needing, I think, well, certainly tempted by the idea of what would be a quick fix. Paul had looked for the position before. He'd put himself forward. They had decided at that point, I think about a month or so ago, that Foley, you know, bringing in somebody like Foley from outside was a better option, that it would go, play better with the outside world, and in particular Shane Ross. That didn't work out, and so they've gone for Cook at this stage. So yeah, look, it's probably less than ideal in the circumstances, but at the same time, I mean, Cook is a very safe pair of hands, and he's already had a very positive impact on the place, so I can see the appeal from their point of view.
We know that John Foley didn't proceed with taking up the role because he felt he didn't have the support of all the stakeholders. Does this mean that Paul Cook does have the support of all the stakeholders, Emmett?
No, not really. No, I think Minister Ross will be against the notion of Paul Cook going in there as well. I think the message from the minister has been pretty much that he doesn't want anyone with a history of association with the FAI. Foley had been on the National League Executive Committee for quite a number of years, And so, Ross kind of took against him on that basis. I think he acknowledged in his statement yesterday that he respected all the contributions that Foley had made to other associations, to sport in general, his record for delivering. But he just made it clear that, you know, from the outset, I've been saying I don't want people who have a kind of record of being involvement, and particularly going back to the John Delaney days at the association. Paul Cook also has that. I mean, it's a very different type of association. He was a club representative. He was on the council. He would have certainly in later years been seen as a kind of critic of Delaney and would have been frozen out on that basis. But you get the feeling from Ross that he doesn't want to get into that sort of kind of level of detail. He's just said he wants these people to go, and Cook being appointed is unlikely to make him very happy. But what this is more in tune with, in a way, is the appointment of Noel Mooney, where the FAI have just said, like, we're making this appointment ourselves and hang the consequences. I think the difference with Foley was that Foley himself probably didn't want to take the position unless he had the support of the minister, which he clearly didn't, so he decided himself to step away. That was never going to happen with Paul Cook.
Was Paul Cook probably not a really, I think he's probably a suitable guy. I mean, he's in there at the moment, involved in the accounts and the FAI,
sure.
He's the honorary treasurer. With the crisis they're in, is he not the obvious person and probably the right person to take this forward for a month or 6 weeks anyway?
Yeah, well, look, I think if it is for a month or 6 weeks, that you might be spot on there. I certainly think, like, it, you know, I can absolutely see how it made sense last night in the board meeting to do this. They had a real problem otherwise. They had to go back and start, you know, looking around for somebody who was suitable from outside. If they want to kind of meet this criteria that the person has no history of association with the organisation, then that's an issue. And I'm not entirely clear how they keep on appointing people who do have a history, but Cook, in the circumstances, is different. Yeah, absolutely. He's in there. He has been working on a voluntary basis for the organisation for about 5 months now, 6 months. He has done a lot to move it forward. He brought kind of accounting expertise and management expertise. He's done a lot to kind of get to the stage where the accounts are going to be published on Thursday. There, you know, he has absolutely kind of been an advocate of transparency and openness after having been, you know, locked out of much of what was going on in the organisation when he was supposed to be representing the club. club and have kind of access to the figures himself for many years. So, yeah, look, if it is a very short-term appointment, then I think it makes a lot of sense. I think where the you know, I think Cook has wanted it. There's been a sense that Cook wanted it on a longer-term basis. He would have taken the 6 months that was going as the kind of interim chief executive role that John Foley was lined up for. Whether that still looks like a good fit after a while, and with the minister taking a very hard line on funding, I'm not so sure. And whether we get into a situation now where perhaps the funding, you know, is so tight that redundancy notices start being handed out, and we have on the one hand the association saying that it's the minister's fault, and on the other hand the minister saying that it's the association's fault, then, you know, it's going to be a very, very ugly situation to be in.
Then obviously you can see why the minister is looking for it, but then you obviously need somebody who's completely independent. And would the likes of a Stuart Regan, who was the former CEO of the Scottish FA,
sure,
would he be an ideal candidate then?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about Stuart Regan to say. I've kind of encountered him once or twice down the years. I don't know whether somebody from outside Ireland is necessarily it has to be that distant. I mean, I there has to be people you would think who are perfectly well qualified within Irish sport who didn't necessarily serve on a committee in the FAI. That doesn't seem to be beyond the realms of possibility. But yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I think. And they did go through this period where they were waiting for John Foley to come in. There was a month or so where it was known he was coming in. He went in, he spent a bit of time in there last week and did a handover. And so when he pulled out at such short notice, it left him with a real problem, whether it's Stuart Regan or somebody from one of the other associations who has shown that they you know, are good in a difficult situation. God knows we have enough sports organisations who've been, you know, through a crisis or two in their day to give the people the sort of experience they're looking for here. That's all very well, but yeah, absolutely. Right now, they had a real problem. They're entering into a phase where they're about to publish their accounts. They're trying to get independent directors on. They're trying to restore government funding. There's just so much going on there for an organisation not to have a kind of, you know, a stand-in interim CEO, somebody who's kind of essentially, you know, identifiably running the ship. And so I can understand why they've tried to act on that.
Emma, Thursday is going to be a big day because the FAI plan to publish those accounts that you mentioned. What are you expecting from them, and will they include full details of John Delaney's exit package?
Yeah, so what I'm expecting is kind of bad news. I think they're going to try and, you know, package it all in such a way that they just get it out there in one go. I don't think they'll want any kind of lingering suspicions about them trying to cover things up. I don't think most of the people involved in the current board want to be tarnished with what went on before they came into their current position. So I think they're going to chuck it all out there. I think they see the sense is that they see having one really bad, really, really bad day as a good thing, if you like, that they just get it out there, answer every question, and then finally start to put that kind of end of things behind them. Paul Cook and Donald Conway did a press conference about a month ago where they talked about this whole thing of the John Delaney package, and it comes down to an accounting convention, I think. You know, what you're basically doing is you're looking at the accounts for a year, in this case 2018, but, you know, it is either a convention or a requirement that you then outline any kind of major outstanding liabilities that affect the picture you're looking. So you're attempting to give a reflection of what the more up-to-date picture is in terms of the finances of the organisation. I think it works the same with a company. They were not 100% guaranteed that the details of John Delaney's package would be in there. It's clearly a very significant amount of money. It clearly does impact on the kind of overall outlook of the association. They were seeking kind of clarification on whether they absolutely had to include it, but I think the sense was that they were going to be told that they did have to include it, and I think they want to be told that they have to include it. That's the sense that I get. I don't think these two guys, Conway and Cook, are the two people who led the negotiations with Delaney, who handed over, you know, or signed the deal for the organisation. I think they're acutely aware that there's a lot of discomfort about the amount of money that Delaney got. I think they want to be able to say what it was, and I think they want to be able to explain why they gave it to him. So, my sense is that we are going to find that out.
John Delaney had repeatedly said that the FAI would be out of debt by 2020. Rumour has it that's more looking like 2030 now. Yeah. Will they have to sell out their share of the Aviva, do you think?
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, I mean, you can argue about whether they would have to or not. I mean, they clearly need to do a lot of things to raise money. The 2020 thing was always kind of, you know, completely unrealistic. They had the disaster of the Vantage Club tickets. That was the way they were going to pay for the stadium. It was also going to, you know, give them a steady revenue. The plan was that when they came back in 2020, well, maybe it was 2020, 21, this is when he was talking at the launch of the Vantage Club thing, that when they came around the second time, they'd have paid off the stadium and the sales of those tickets would be pure income. So he had made a lot of commitments, he'd made a lot of big promises, and he wasn't able to live up to those because the Vantage Club thing failed so badly. And from that point, they were always in trouble, and he was always in trouble. And Delaney's kind of reputation was staked towards this whole thing of then being able to, you know, claiming that they would pay the whole thing off by 2020. This is, I guess, why when schemes go spectacularly wrong on a huge scale, the people, it's probably better that the people responsible just walk at that point. What happened here was that Delaney stayed on, and everything he did after that was sort of dictated by trying to justify his position post Vantage Club. And what they were doing was drawing down every sponsorship, every TV deal in advance, all the money that they could get up front. And that has kind of turned into a bit of a spiral for them, because they spend tomorrow's money today and then have to get tomorrow, you know, the day after is money tomorrow, and that's something that they need to get out of, and it's going to take quite a few years to get out of. They have some issues in terms of whether they, you know, reduce their costs substantially, that would involve obviously redundancies, or whether they try and generate a kind of big one-off lump sum payment. The problem with the Aviva Stadium, selling the Aviva Stadium, I would have thought, is that, you know, either you sell it to the IRFU, who are the most obvious buyers for it. But I mean, if you've only got one buyer in the market, they're not bidding anyone against anyone, and all you're doing essentially is structuring a deal so that you give them a profit. Like, I mean, the IRFU aren't going to bail the FAI out. There's nothing in it for them. So you're just coming up with a lump sum that the FAI gets now, and then they pay it back to the IRFU with interest in terms of the matches that they play there, because their rent will obviously go up so very substantially, because they're not playing commercial terms, those sort of commercial terms now. And so in the long term, it turns into another bad deal for them, I would have thought. So I don't really see how that works for them. Perhaps if they wanted to create a bit of competition and go out into the market and see whether there was anyone who wanted to own 50% of a stadium, I'm not sure whether that's a very vibrant market, but that would sort of make more sense. But I couldn't see the IRFU sitting by and letting that happen, and I couldn't imagine it being a very desirable outcome from the government's point of view. So I would be surprised if any of that happens.
Thanks, Emmett. I'm sure you're looking forward to Thursday's report when it does come out, nearly as much as Marie, who can't wait to get to her tea to one over here. Thanks a million.
Cheers, thanks.
Game on.
On 2FM. Weekdays from 6.